Okay, so day two, Sunday, and we're going to continue today with practice of taking up the first foundation of mindfulness, so mindfulness of body. And I'd just like to say a few more things, a few of the subtleties around this practice of mindfulness of body. And I think it's a strange thing that we discover when we start this practice that the body or the mind doesn't always follow our suggestions. Have you noticed that? So, I'm willing to sit down with myself and just attend to the way the mind moves and invite the mind to settle and stay. And mind just shows itself to be quite resistant to that invitation sometimes. And faced with sitting here with, just attending to the most simple aspect of my experience, the breathing, the most simple aspect that we possibly can take up, the fact of being here and breathing, and sometimes almost anything else shows up as being more interesting than that. Anyone else noticed that? So our stories can be really seductive, can't they? Fascinating, in fact. The movie of me, that's what I think of it as. The best seller of all time. So this tells us something about our relationship to what's happening. We invite the mind to still and settle, to rest the attention, rest the awareness in the body, and it does something else, and that tells us that we're not in control. We're not in control of this process. And yet we can notice that as a result of our engagement in practice and our intention, that it does start to have an effect. And part of the effect is simply that because we've invited the mind to be present on the body, we notice when the mind wanders off. So usually we don't notice that our mind is wandering. It just, that's its habitual pattern. It wanders its default pathways. But when we invite it to stay, we notice that it does that. And as we become more sensitive to what's happening and learning to release and leave alone that restless, hungry seeking. And to start to appreciate the immediacy and the stability and the wonder of this ordinary moment-by-moment experience unfolding before us. Because just the movement of breath or the fluid sensations in the body right now. Just the fact that there even is sensory experience starts to show itself as being extraordinary, miraculous, unfathomably deep and wondrous and fragile and precious. Because we don't know how long it's going to last. So there's a lovely analogy of this process that we're entering into. And you may have heard it before, but it's a good one, so I'm going to mention it again. And that's an analogy of training a puppy. So, our mind is a bit like a puppy. If you think about, when you get a puppy, a little puppy, gorgeous and cute, just like the mind. And puppies, you know, if they're untrained, they just run about. They do their puppy thing. They're all over the place. And so they need to be trained. And if you think about when we train the puppy, it takes a while, doesn't it? We don't just, the puppy just doesn't get it the very first time we say, come, sit, stay. No, it might come and then it runs away again. And we have to say again, come, sit, stay. And then it runs away again. Just like minds do. And if we judge the puppy and say, bad dog, bad mind, bad meditator, failure, then what happens? The puppy just gets unhappy. It's not the puppy's fault. It just hasn't learned yet. It's just doing its puppy thing. And the message the puppy gets when we treat it like that is that, you know, this is maybe not a person that I want to hang out with. Maybe I won't hang out there. Maybe even fear comes. But if we're friendly with the puppy and patient and kind, and the puppy might start to think, oh, this person's okay. Maybe I'll hang out with them for a bit. And our mind is the same. If we're friendly and inviting and encouraging, and create that kind of environment, the mind is actually more likely to stay present. If we're hostile in response or judgmental, actually the mind just wanders away more quickly. So you can see that for yourself. And the other thing about puppies is they need some guidance, they need some discipline. So, you know, the puppy, we can't let the puppy just eat everything that it wants to. It'll get unhealthy. We want it to be healthy. So sometimes we have to just very kindly say, no. With a sense of kindliness, but clarity. And some firm discipline. So softness, forgiveness, encouragement, and a sense of sustaining over and over again. Doesn't matter how many times the puppy runs away, we just patiently bring it back and start again. And if we notice that our relationship to our mind is not kind, that we are responding with judgment, then that bit of the mind is really just like another puppy. The angry puppy that doesn't like that the other puppy ran away. Sometimes we have a lot of puppies in our minds. It can be all sorts of puppies doing all sorts of things. And so if we can just remember that they're gorgeous and cute and they're still in training, then we can relate with kindness and generosity in our experience. So the Buddha spoke of two qualities that contribute to clear knowing. I talked yesterday about clear knowing or clear comprehension. And these two qualities are called shamatha vipassana. And These are two qualities that we're cultivating here. So shamatha basically means calm, tranquil, unified, gathered mind. And it's supported by that process of bringing attention to a simple experience, so in this case, breath and body, or the foot taking a step, and gathering in what the Buddha called the flighty mind that alights where it wishes. And the process of doing this is sometimes referred to as developing concentration. And it's an interesting word, this word concentration. It's another of these examples where the translation of the Pali is perhaps not so helpful. I don't know about you, but for me, when I hear the word concentrate, you know, there's sort of that association with making an effort. You know, when you're at school and the teacher said, concentrate. Yeah. And there's an effort of will and a kind of forcing that can come in response to that. And doing it as an act of will is really not helpful. So I was reading the other day a book by Joseph Goldstein, and he said about this, he said, sometimes the development of concentration is accompanied by a kind of striving and efforting that actually gets in the way of concentration. In my efforts to concentrate, I was sometimes unknowingly practicing desire and the wanting mind, which are exactly what hinders concentration. So making that effort of will and forcing is not helpful to developing concentration or samadhi or shamatha, tranquility and calm. And as we develop shamatha, that tranquility, the calm mind, that deepens our capacity for concentration. The Buddha said we can observe for ourselves when tranquility is developed, in moments of calm and composure, the mind is free of wanting or not wanting. And it's free from the restlessness and agitation of those states. So I find the word unification more helpful than concentration. Allowing the mind to come into presence, into unity with the body. Mind and body moving together. And the other part of shamatha vipassana is the vipassana part. So vipassana just means clear seeing. And the word insight in insight meditation is one translation of vipassana. It's about clear seeing, understanding processes, mechanisms, and underlying causes. And it's profoundly supported by a calm and unified mind. So we're gathering, unifying, collecting, and coming back is the first step, training this mind to be intimate with our immediate experience, to be connected, to be here. And it's hard for us because, as we looked at before, our attention doesn't naturally gather and settle on the thing that we're attending to, on the object of attention. So this is also very much a process of the heart opening. That's equally important, to soften our resistance, to the way that life is, to the way that we'd rather it isn't, to open and soften. So with this practice, when things are calm and smooth, not a lot is challenging, and the mind can then settle and unify, and that's great. But when there's challenges and the mind is reactive, distracted, we can notice that our response is often that we contract, we tighten, or we close, or the mind narrows. We can feel it energetically, the energy just sucking inwards. And when it's like that, we're really called upon to open our heart. Oh, it's like this. Opening to the difficulty. And if we can bring a quality of allowing, soften that resistance, soften the attitude of, it's not supposed to be like that. It shouldn't be like this. So softening, widening, and relaxing in response to that. As Jill was leading us so beautifully yesterday, just inviting that release, allowing ourselves to receive the experience. So what that means is that whatever's happening, it's all good if we understand how to use it. If the mind's calm and settled, that's wonderful. And if there's difficulty, then we're practicing the opening of the heart. And so today, in the mindfulness of body, we can sustain our focus on the body sitting, the body walking, through whatever our daily activities are. But we can be more precise now and explore the more subtle aspects of experience. So what is it that tells me that I'm breathing? What is it that tells me that I'm sitting? And as we observe these more subtle aspects of our experience, we might settle at a particular place, some sensation that we're exploring. And it's really important, the quality of mind that we bring to this. So rather than tightening around it, or holding it down or hovering over it. You know, sometimes when there's a particular sensation going on, and for myself, I find, especially if it's an unpleasant sensation, it's almost like we're hovering over it and we're meditating on it. And it's almost like it hasn't got room to breathe. And so mindfulness has these qualities. I was thinking about this last night. It's almost like if you think of like a sound deck, you know, in a recording studio, and you've got those, what do you call them? You know, the buttons that you can move up and back, you know, and there's three I want to talk about today. So the first one is that mindfulness can zoom in just like a camera, you know, you can go from wide angle to zoom. And so we can hone in on an experience and narrow the focus. And as I said, sometimes that can be helpful, but sometimes it can actually constrict the object of attention and give it no room to breathe. So it can be helpful also to zoom out, to widen the focus, widen the attention, give the object some space. Use the wide angle view so that we can still see the object, but it has room to move. And that way there's less pressure. So we can play with this function of mindfulness, zoom in and zoom out, and see what works. The second aspect that's really interesting is that we can move towards an experience, or we can allow the experience to come to us. And often these go together. So we narrow and we move towards, or we widen out and allow the experience to come to us. So it's more helpful, really, to cultivate a more receptive state of mind where it supports the movement of the mind to still rather than moving towards. And the third thing that we can play with and notice is the degree of intensity of our attention. So our attention can be anything from a laser-like intensity to a very light attention. And letting the attention be light is very helpful. So a feather-light attention, delicately touching the sensations of the breath, can really take our meditation deeper than a kind of forceful penetration. So often less is more. So that in our practice, we can settle back with a light, receptive, spacious awareness, open and relaxed, with an enjoyment of being present. And sometimes we can notice that paying attention to the breathing affects the breathing. And we've heard this instruction saying we're not trying to control the breathing, we're just observing and allowing the breathing. And what I would say is that if that's what's happening, noticing that by observing the breathing, you're having an impact on it, then just notice that. If you can't not do it, you know, if by observing it, it's having an effect, then you're not really doing it. It's just what's happening. And so the last thing that I want to talk about before we sit together today, this morning, is to invite you in this practice to commit to staying on your seat. So in the Zen tradition, you know, you're not allowed to move. You sit down at the beginning of the sitting, and if you move, somebody yells out, "Be still!" Something like that. Scares the living daylights out of you. And we're not Zen. But what we're cultivating here is the capacity to be with whatever arises in our experience. And sometimes what arises is discomfort or boredom or agitation. And if we haven't made that commitment, that resolve, that intention to stay still, we can find ourselves up and out of here before we've even noticed what prompted that. Have you noticed that? So we need to see this clearly. And to do that, we need to bring some resolve here to not moving. And it's exactly the same as with mindfulness. Mindfulness of breath and body, you know, we invite the mind to settle on breathing and body, and we notice when it's slipped away. It's the same thing. We invite ourselves to be still, and we notice the desire or the urge to move. So meditation gives us the opportunity to be still in the face of discomfort, not to be pushed around by life circumstances. Which is how we usually are. So if there's the urge to move, then see if we can take, if we can orient to exploring that and being interested. What is that? What is going on that we're wanting to move away from? Or is there something that we're moving towards? Noticing that sense of movement of the mind. And so whatever's happening, we can notice that and spend some time with it. And it's not that this is most certainly not a practice of stoicism or endurance. And so we pause, we investigate, we explore, and we may then decide to change our posture. So for example, if what's arising is some physical discomfort, you know, the leg is falling asleep. That happens to me a lot of the time. Or there's pain. So once we've paused and had a look and explored, if we decide to move, to do that consciously, slowly, with mindfulness, silently, noticing the intention to move, and then the movement itself, and then settling into the new posture. And especially if you've had some kind of injury, then it's good to be kind and careful with your body. But I would say resist the urge to get up and walk around or move somewhere else in the room. So even though we might change our posture, committing to remain on this spot for the whole period of this sitting. And if you have questions around how to sit with more comfort, then please just be in touch. I'm happy to spend some time with you, helping you with your posture. There are certainly postures and ways that create less discomfort. So let's just take a couple of minutes, because you've been sitting here, let's just take a couple of minutes, 2 minutes, to just stretch.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.